Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
If you're struggling with drugs, alcohol, gambling or food, or concerned about somebody who is, tune in to the Living Free show on 3CR at 1 p.m. every Thursday.
I don't know how I got there, but and I couldn't stop it.
I had stopped expecting that anybody cared.
Never enough. I'm never enough. It's never enough. He's never enough.
That was the confusion.
Tune in to Living Free, stories of recovery from addictive behaviour, Thursdays at 1 p.m. on 3CR. Or listen at 3CR on digital radio or podcasts and live streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Being able to centre myself and be okay in myself and turn my world around.
Living Free.
Welcome to the Living Free show on 3CR Community Radio 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Also, before we start, I would like to remind you that the Radiothon is coming up in June, and the Living Free show, like all the other shows on 3CR, is raising funds to support 3CR Community Radio's 2026 budget. 3CR provides a Living Free show with a large, engaged audience and contributes to our ability to meet our primary purpose, to share experience of recovery with those who still suffer from addiction and compulsion and those who are concerned about them. This year, 3CR is celebrating 50 years of community broadcasting. We broadcast the issues that matter. Your donation will keep community voices on air, voices that inform, inspire and connect us. Please help us to continue this vital work. Donate to 3CR today and keep 3CR on air for another 50 years. Go to givenow.com.au/CR/Living Free Radiothon to show your appreciation of this show. But today it is my pleasure to welcome Jackie. Jackie is a member of Al-Anon, and Al-Anon is a program in which people support each other in recovery from being affected by another person's addiction to alcohol. So Jackie's come in at short notice, for which I'm very grateful. So thank you so much, Jackie, and welcome.
Thanks, Anne. Thank you for having me.
So you're going to tell us about your journey with a family member with a problem of addiction. But before we start that, would you be able to just tell us a little bit about your own background, your own growing up, your childhood, etc.?
Yes. Well, I grew up in the country. My parents didn't drink, but from teenage years on, there was a big drinking culture around at that time. So over the years, I probably have had relationships on and off with people that have had problems with alcohol and addiction. But I've never really understood, because I haven't I haven't experienced that myself. I've been able to have a drink and not feel that obsession or craving that some people have.
Mm-hmm. So your own experience of drinking then was just social drinking and maybe being in contact with other people who maybe weren't as able to just keep it social, but that they didn't affect you that much?
I think in hindsight, getting some education from Al-Anon, I realised that it does actually affect you, and that you start to behave in certain ways, tiptoe around people, and that becomes a bit of an ingrained habit. And I think that, you know, that has definitely been something that I've done for a long time.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's what we come to when we get to Al-Anon, isn't it? We realise we've got to look at our own habits, which can be a little bit annoying when we hear that when we've come in after being really battered around by the relationship that we're having. What would you think, if looking back, was your first experience of being affected by someone with alcoholism?
I would say my first experience was with a partner that I had in my early 20s, and he mainly was a binge drinker, and we would just end up fighting all the time, and I couldn't seem to get through to him that I found his behaviour unacceptable. And yeah, it was unpredictable. It just had a lot of aspects that I look back at, and I thought that they were just problems between him and I. But I can see now that there was an aspect of his dependence on alcohol, and also his inability to to manage it. Yeah, properly. He wasn't really functioning socially very well.
Were you then inclined to try and fix him then? Was that one of the habits you developed?
Yes, I did. And it's only really been recently that, you know, I thought about this, that I was affected way back then, that, you know, at the time I even... we bought a place together, and I kept thinking that I have to hang in there, and it wasn't going well, but it must be because he wasn't living with his friends and his family, so I moved there with him. And yeah, after a short time we broke up, and unfortunately I didn't know about Al-Anon or anything back then.
Mm-hmm. If you were to talk to that Jackie now and say, what would your advice to her be?
I would advise definitely to get along to Al-Anon. It would have made me stronger and wiser, I'm sure, and maybe avoided a few pitfalls that I've found myself in now.
Yep. All right, we'll come back to that later. So we're going back to that person then. So you left that relationship. Was there anyone else after that that tested your character, whatever?
No, probably the next person is my spouse, and he has had issues with alcohol too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so coming back now to what you said, that we develop these ingrained habits, could you talk to us a little bit about what that looks like, just to give someone listening an idea of what sort of habits, what sort of behaviours might you see in the spouse of an alcoholic, such as you were and are? Sorry, I don't want to call your husband an alcoholic. I'll just retract that. Someone with a problem of alcoholism. I'll just retract
fine.
That too. Someone who drinks too much.
No, it's all good. He, you know, he has been in a rehab facility, so, you know, he definitely would be in that category. I think that the behaviours of the partners, there's a range of them. It can be from trying to control a situation and becoming a bit like a raving lunatic, you know, screeching and demanding, or wondering that you know, what's going to happen, and you don't want to upset anybody's mood or bring on a drinking episode. So you are trying to make everything nice for everybody all the time. I guess that's, you know, the walking on eggshells type thing, and smoothing things over, sweeping things under the rug. I did so much of that.
Yeah. Can you give an example of that at all?
Well, I think in my marriage, I didn't really associate my husband coming home from work with that's when he wanted to have a drink. But I just thought that him coming home and being a bit grumpy and whatever at that time, that it was because of us. And so I would try and keep the kids quiet, make the house clean, be, you know, nice, welcoming. But it never worked. It wasn't really about that. It was about that he wanted to have a drink.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. So, and then another person after that?
Yeah, well, only my daughter, but she has a dual diagnosis. So she has mental illness, but she also has addiction to alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that, as much as you're comfortable with?
It's been very challenging. I didn't really understand how anyone could, you know, their first thought could be to have a drink in the morning, that nothing else in life mattered except that was the number one priority. And I was ashamed, I was embarrassed. I just couldn't understand it. I was trying to change everything and nothing was working, and things just started to unravel very rapidly. But together with the mental illness, it was just I didn't know what was what. I didn't know what I was dealing with. And it was when I sought help, and I was, you know, labelled as my daughter's carer, that I had a carer's coach, and they were assisting me to deal with things. And she was the one that told me about Al-Anon, and I had no intention of coming to Al-Anon. I was like so embroiled in it at that time that I didn't want any of my time, any time that I had, which wasn't a lot, to be taken up going to a meeting about alcohol. I didn't know what it was about. I refused for a long time, and at that time it was COVID as well. And I eventually did log on to a meeting, and I think just because it was Zoom and I didn't have that connection of the people so much, that I sort of, again, it took me a while to go back. But this coach kept insisting, you know, you've got to do six meetings, try six different meetings and keep coming back and, you know, just give it a go. So that's what I did, and yeah, forever grateful that she put me on that track.
So when you got to your first Al-Anon meeting, were you surprised at what it was? Was it different from what you were expecting?
I guess so. I guess I didn't really expect so much structure. As in, you know, the way the meeting is always sort of formatted, no matter where you go, pretty much they're very similar. And I guess I didn't really think it would be like that. I thought it might be people just sitting around chatting or whatever. But yeah, it really works the way it does have that format and that program. So yeah, I can see that that's a benefit. But the thing I did find confusing when I first started Al-Anon was people talking about the program. I'm like, yeah, but what is the program?
Like, oh, just calling something the program and you're not sure what they meant.
Yeah.
We might come back. We'll have a little break and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about that.
Is drinking costing you more than money? Alcoholics Anonymous provides a free and anonymous recovery service to anyone who wants to call it quits. Join millions of other alcoholics worldwide and take your first brave steps towards a new beginning. There are thousands of AA meetings happening every week across Australia. If you'd like to find your closest meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or have any questions regarding this tried and tested treatment for alcoholism, call 1-300-AA-AA-AA. That's 1-300-22-22-22 or visit aa.org.au.
This community service announcement is sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Think again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio. 855 AM on your dial.
And on 3CR Digital and streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
This is the Living Free Show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you would like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us via phone or email. Today, my guest is Jackie and we're chatting about living with alcoholism and with closeness to a problem drinker, and in this case, closeness to a person who is a problem drinker but also has a diagnosis of mental illness. So that's an interesting angle for us to talk about, because I think that presents you with particular challenges. Jackie, is that right?
Yeah, it's it is a minefield, even for the, you know, specialists. It's a bit like they don't know which basket to put her in, and everybody, yeah, has their opinions. It's very, very hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, tell us, we'll go back just to the thinking about the alcoholism. So you said you got to the meeting and everyone's going on about the program and you weren't really sure what that was. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you now understand that to be, that program?
Yeah, I would say that the program basically is attending Al-Anon meetings, either, you know, it doesn't have to be in person, either by Zoom or in person, reading the Al-Anon literature. They're the main things, but putting the work in yourself, reflecting on your own behaviours, and I do think that an important part of it, you don't have to believe in a particular god or religion, but maintaining that that conscious contact with a higher power, I think, is a strong part of the program that, is a big one too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that's very interesting. So what is it about that? Let's just call it like a perspective that's way outside of the current situation you're in. Call it a higher power or universal intelligence or something. Why is it, do you think, that that's so helpful in the kind of crisis that you might be faced with when your child's unwell?
I think for me, I have had a relationship with a higher power for a long time, but when you're in the turmoil of crisis situations, you forget to lean into that. And I think where it's really helpful is, you know, we are powerless over another person's drinking. And so being able to just hand over things, as we say, you know, to a power higher than ourselves, and in a form of, you know, either prayer or meditation or just however you want to do it, journaling, anything to just release yourself from that attachment to an issue that, you know, you're affected by it, but really you can't control it and you can't cure it. You're powerless. So that's where I find that having that higher power, it just, and it, you know, miracles happen. And I think just there's a lot we don't understand in the universe, and letting go is what Al-Anon kind of teaches. And I feel that that has been really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty profound stuff. And my first thought is, you know, letting go is such an important part. But, you know, as a mother, how on earth do you let go of a suffering child, right? So can you give us any idea about what that looks like in practice? And I'm sure it doesn't, you're not able to do it every time. None of us are. But can you talk about that in practice a little bit?
I think it has been a very steep learning curve for me, and I was very enmeshed with my daughter, so enmeshed that, you know, I didn't know where her pain began and mine finished. Like, we were just very codependent, and I think letting go, I haven't completely let go. I'm still very much in her life. But I'm slowly letting go of the fact that this is not my pain to carry. This is not my journey. I'm there with her. I'm alongside her. But I can't do it for her. And so just even just by that, no, small shift, I guess you'd say, or big shift, I don't know. But it's had a profound effect for both myself and for her, and our relationship and our family. Like, things are way more peaceful than we were at a few years back.
So that seems to be a really important thing, I think. So we have to let go for the sake of ourselves and to deal with our own pain in the situation. But it's a really it's a real reason for hope to think that that might actually help the person suffering from the addiction too. Could you explain how that works in your relationship with your daughter? Like how does that help her if you're dealing with your own pain and not her pain directly?
Yeah, I think it relieves her of a lot of guilt and shame. You know, where she knows that I don't condone drinking, and But it's just being able to accept more and judge less, just, you know, it's such a relief on both our parts. And for her, yeah, I think it just, I don't know, instead of constantly resenting me and my intrusion and my, what's the word, where you, you know, it's undignified to try and control somebody's life, really. And as much as I would have it completely different way, yeah, I think that sort of just stepping back and allowing and trying to accept as much as you can. But along with that, of course, there has to be boundaries. And I didn't even know what a boundary was. When my counsellor was saying to me, you need boundaries, I'm like, well, tell me what they are. What are they? You know, give me a boundary. I'll do whatever you say. But I had no idea. I had no idea the concept of that.
Yeah, I remember that too. Just thinking, oh, if someone's suffering, I've got to help them.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how much that causes me to suffer. That's what I have to do. It just didn't occur to me that you had a choice.
Yeah.
So what do the, now that you've, you know, had a bit more experience, what are the boundaries? What does it look like for you? Or does it change day to day? Or?
Well, I have to say, yeah, they're not totally rigid. It's not like I won't help her out at all. And in our situation, we do help support our daughter to have a roof over her head. And she doesn't live with us. I think that's been healthier for all of us. And I know that we're very fortunate to be able to do that. But I did struggle with a long time that people would think I was enabling. And I know a lot of people do think that, and tough love and, you know, she needs to hit rock bottom, whatever. But my heart, which I'm very grateful that some wise members said, just follow your own heart. My heart couldn't do that. And so, and I feel like recently I've read a lot more about stability is not the same as enabling. And so I like to think that we're just providing some stability, but we don't blindly give money. We only pay bills, like, mm-hmm. rent, you know, towards rent and towards some bills, but we don't, yeah.
You don't rush in with money to save her from something or...
Yeah, no. It's tricky because sometimes you're tired, sometimes, you know, they wear you down and you do give money sometimes. That's what I'm saying, that it's not always so rigid, but we're doing the best we can.
And you're doing it a day at a time, right? So if you change your mind tomorrow and become more give even more stability or less enabling or put up a different boundary, it's up to how you put the boundary up for yourself, don't you? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the boundary is to protect yourself. Like, you know, if a conversation or whatever starts to get abusive, I'll just end it. And that, you know, that's forgotten usually by the drinker quite quickly. I might have stewed over it for a lot longer, but it does protect our relationship because it doesn't escalate, but we don't do things that we regret, and that's my boundary for, you know, I'm not going to participate in that. So that's one. There's lots of them, really. Like if I can see that they're under the weather a bit, I won't let them in my car because I've had some incidents and traumas and whatever in my car. So even if I'd promised that I'd give them a lift somewhere and then I concede, no, this isn't safe for me, then I won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important thing. I'm glad you make that point, because it's the boundary's not to sort of keep them out or to do anything to them, is it? It's to keep you sane and stable yourself, so that you can be most use to yourself and the other person in the situation. Now this the dual diagnosis, that's as you say, such a difficult thing, and difficult even for professional people dealing with it. And I'm wondering if you can tell me, because I don't know myself either, but is there a different advice for how to help your mentally ill relative than you would get for about how to help your addicted relative? Do they contradict each other in tricky ways?
I think the main contradiction would be in the tough love thing, because if I had known all the way through that it was an alcohol problem only, I might have been able to be firmer in lots of ways. But when you've got someone that's mentally unstable, and you don't know what they're going to do and how it can affect them and people around them, it's a tricky line to walk sometimes. And, you know, I mean, other people that have experienced this may find, you know, no, it's the same. You've got to be the same. But to me, I felt it, that it's been harder because, there's, you know, higher risk of suicide and different things as well. So
yeah, absolutely. So just on that mention of suicide, I will just put it out there that there is if you are dealing with mental health issues yourself, or are concerned about someone around you who's having mental health issues and you think they may harm themselves, the suicide callback service is 1-300-659-467. And you can also go to suicidecallbackservice.org.au. There's also Suicide Line Victoria, 1-300-651-251, suicideline.org.au. You're listening to the 3CR Living Free Show on 3CR 855 kilohertz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. Feel free to go through all of our podcasts if you'd like to listen to those. You can just Google 3CR Living Free and our website's there with all the podcasts. Today, my guest is Jackie, and we're chatting about living with a relative with both an addiction to alcohol and a diagnosed mental illness, and just about the sort of minefield you might be dealing with there to feel that you're doing the right thing by the person and by yourself. Can you talk a bit, Jackie, about what your advice, you say that your counsellor gave you some good advice, which was go to Al-Anon. Is there other advice for the mental illness side of it that's helpful?
I found that just getting as much information as you can to educate yourself around what you're dealing with is a good thing, and not being afraid to advocate for your loved one, because a lot of services are very strained and they can't or don't want to or whatever accept everybody. But if you know that this is, you know, a serious issue, then I would advise to keep advocating. Don't just accept that, you know, don't be fobbed off, basically. Also, there are the thing in the mental health stream is that there are so many arms of it, and the left hand doesn't talk to the right hand, and people don't even know what exists. So
Yeah, I know.
If you can get into something, I don't know what they call it exactly, but I went to the Ivanhoe Hub, they called it, and it was a connect place. And so I went in there and spoke to a person who put me on to like the local health ability and had an appointment with them, and they said, okay, what do you need? And linked me in with those services. So I wouldn't have a clue about them. You can Google forever and not find things or find different things. It's just crazy. But yeah. That's what I would recommend. And if you if you can't find these things yourself, just walk in and ask, and they'll point you in the right direction. So.
And then you can just change direction if you have to. Just keep asking is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
All right. So you got pointed to Al-Anon, and you mentioned earlier that you were grateful for Al-Anon. Can you talk a little bit about that gratitude and what is it about it that you're grateful for?
Oh, I can't begin to tell you how grateful I am. Like, just by going to the meetings and hearing all the different speakers and everybody's different perspectives and their wisdom and their support afterwards, you know, it's just, that is phenomenal. And it takes a while for everything to sink in, but little by little, you know, stuff filters through and you start thinking differently. And that's a big one, because it's very easy for me to get in a negative rut and feel very helpless and hopeless. But Al-Anon, you know, it doesn't give you hope that your loved one may recover. It gives you hope that you can handle any challenge, and that is, you know, it can relate to any area in your life, not just in dealing with alcoholism, but, you know, it's given me tools to examine my own behaviours. What am I doing that's perhaps causing, you know, some of my grief? And what else? It's just taught me to have empathy, that, you know, I'm grateful that, but for the grace of God, I don't have this addiction. I am blessed, and it's given me a greater understanding of the other person, and I don't feel like I'm so much the judge of others. It's, you know, we're all equal. It's just that, yeah, we all have different challenges, so.
Yeah, different burdens to carry, and we're all doing the best we can. Yep. And you talked about the importance of having information. And I must say, at an Al-Anon meeting, if you get, you know, X number of speakers all sharing their lived experience, you're going to get a lot of information, aren't you?
Yeah.
Just about what happens to them, what happened to them, and what they did about it, and what you could try, you know. And you can get that any night of the week, any day of the week.
Yeah, exactly.
For not much, for no money really, voluntary contribution of a few dollars. Now, getting also the other thing that you said earlier, which I thought was really interesting that you brought it up, was the structure of Al-Anon, and I think you mentioned that even the fact that it's so structured is important. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I've only been in Al-Anon for 3 years. But I can see how just having those principles and traditions and guidelines, it keeps the meeting accessible for everybody, and it diffuses any sort of situations that would normally probably arise when you have a lot of people that have been highly stressed and dealing with a lot in their life. But yeah, I find that when you stick to those guidelines, it really eliminates any of that. I haven't experienced in my 3 years any issues really at a meeting. And interestingly, my daughter went to an Al-Anon meeting, and she goes regularly too. She's found
this
it
is
really
a different
helpful.
Daughter from the one
a different daughter, yeah. Yeah, and it's been really helpful for her. And anyway, she was telling me that she was early to a meeting and helping set up, and a member came in and was playing some really loud music or something that she wanted to get her in the mood for the meeting or whatever. And my daughter sort of thought, oh, this is a bit strange, not what we normally do, but she didn't want to speak up or anything. But fortunately, a long-term member sort of came in and said, no, you know, this is not about your choice of music, and we're here for an Al-Anon meeting, and we keep the focus on Al-Anon. And yeah, so I just think it's things like that that really make it a successful program, you know.
Right. So we haven't talked much about those two. We've got these 12 steps. We're a 12-step program, right, for individual recovery, but we've also got the 12 traditions, which are for group harmony. And I don't think we emphasize enough on this show about all of these 12 step, like AA especially. These have been going for what, 70 years or more? About 70
I
years.
I think 75 this year. Yeah.
And all around the world, it's the most successful self-help system in the whole ever in the world. And it's been kept together because it's beautifully structured, amazingly structured democratically, so that nobody can get too much power, or it's always just clear what needs to be done in any group situation. So I wonder if we can talk a little bit about that, Jackie. Just I'm just looking up the 12 traditions here, and we can just talk a little bit out loud so people can hear about what sort of things the traditions do for us. So are you up for that? Is that all right?
Yeah, but I might not be that knowledgeable about it all. But anyway.
I might not either, but we'll just have a crack anyway. So that first tradition is that our common welfare should come first. So personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Have you got anything to say about that? Well, let's just have a little meeting about that. Have you got anything to say about that? If not, we'll just pass on to the next one.
No, I actually have brought that up with friends at times when they're having an issue with a family member, and I'll say, well, you know, your family is obviously important to you, and you demonstrate that by you know, wanting these Christmases or whatever to go well, but you know, there is a element that you need some unity in there. And I think that's an important tradition, maybe why they made it number one.
Right. So I'm thinking, you just mentioned Christmas, a classic time when the families just implode.
Yeah.
They've got people in them with like bad habits or whatever. So it's like the typical example would be, but I want to have lasagna this year. And other people saying, no, we always have turkey. Right. So how do you apply the principle of unity to that?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's another tradition or something in our introduction or whatever that says something about the greatest number. I think it's like
that's what no. It says in the tradition, personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it becomes a bit of a, like you said before, a democratic situation. And if the greatest number want a particular thing, then the person that didn't get their lasagna just needs to zip it and go along with it.
That's right. So I'm just reading something here about this tradition. It says, I am just one part. The common good outweighs my individual desires. So It's teaching you just to be in a bit more mature in a group situation.
Yeah.
All right. So in the next one, and we read these out at every meeting, don't we, Jackie? So to remind us. So the next one, our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. That's a really good one too. Can you talk about that one?
Yeah, from what I know is that, there is no head of a group. Week to week, there can be a range of different people at a meeting. The topic is decided by a chairperson each week, and they can volunteer, you know, anybody can volunteer to chair a meeting. And it's not overruled by a leader as such. You know, we're all just members of Al-Anon, and we go along for mutual benefit. And there are, in Al-Anon, there are leadership positions more on a what would you call it? Like, you know, you have a service position.
So every group's got to have somebody that's going to guarantee to open the meeting each week, for example. Do you have a service role yourself?
I am the treasurer for our group, and it's an easy job. You know, I just collect the money and bank it and pay any bills. And I've taken on the group rep role, which I'm still learning about. I haven't been to an assembly as yet, but from what I gather, I just kind of pass on anything on behalf of our group and feedback anything from the assembly to our group. So, they're not burdensome roles or anything.
Yeah, for you, they're not. And of course, you're not authorized as the treasurer, for example, to go and invest the money on behalf of Al-Anon or something. Your job is always just to say, we've got this amount of money, what do you want me to do with it? And the group might say, buy literature or pay the rent with it or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. And the next one is that we're not affiliated. Anybody that's relatives and friends of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group. So there's no, but as a group, there's no other affiliation. Why is that important?
I think it's just to keep the focus on Al-Anon, you know, that we're not there to support Breast Cancer Week or, you know, other people's agendas. We're here solely to support people affected by somebody else's drinking. And, I think that's what that's about.
Yeah, and Al-Anon doesn't come out publicly. And a friend of mine actually saw the Song Sung Blue, the Neil Diamond story, and it must have had something in it about alcoholism or something. And the friend said, I'm sure Al-Anon supported it. And I thought, that's a sort of a misunderstanding. Al-Anon doesn't support anything, even if it's a great thing that helps the cause, or you know, helps alcoholics or friends of alcoholics. Al-Anon doesn't lend their name to that or support it or do anything. It's completely separate. So it really is quite amazing, isn't it? There's just never any issues about who we support, who we don't support. We don't take money off anybody else. You can't donate. You can't. Somebody can't come and say, "I'd like to donate $10,000 to Al-Anon," because we don't take money from anywhere. It's all by voluntary
self-supporting.
Is this working? Do you reckon we should keep going through these traditions a little bit, or we probably need to come back a little bit more to
Probably got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, we've got 5 minutes. Okay. We'll just leave the traditions there then. But I am glad you brought them up, and I am glad you brought that structure up. And the other thing about the meetings too is they start at a certain time, they finish at a certain time, and they're always introduced the same way with the same language. We welcome you to the Elanor, blah, blah, blah. I found that important when I first started for a sense of calm. Like if you're coming out of a chaotic situation or you've walked in with a chaotic brain, it's just good to hear the same thing over it. That stability that you were talking about.
Yeah. And I think too, when you're not used to chairing meetings or anything, having that structure, it just makes it so much easier. It's just, you know, it's all there for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. So yeah, if sometimes we'll ask someone to chair a meeting and they'll say, "Oh, I could never do something like that," but there's a manual there. You just say exactly what the manual asks you to say. So, and there's another thing too. There's a saying that people say in Al-Anon: "When I got busy, I got better." And it means that by allowing people to do that, take on those, as you say, often quite manageable leadership roles, it can be their first step to regaining some of the self-worth that they might have lost.
Yeah. I think so.
Because so many people come in quite, what's the word?
Depleted.
I was going to say diluted. They come in depleted, and then they get themselves filled up a little bit from that.
Yeah.
All right. So we've got just a few more minutes left. Would you just directly talk to anyone listening that might be thinking, I've got a person very close to me, especially a child, I'd say, a child whose behavior is really concerning because it's dangerous, you know, being drunk and out on your own and all that. Can you just talk directly to that person from your own experience? What would you like to say?
Well, that is something that Al-Anon teaches is that we don't give advice. So I wouldn't sort of say what I think you should or shouldn't do in a particular situation, but I would strongly recommend to come along to meetings, and there are meetings for parents as well, and there's also meetings for what they call adult child. So if you were raised by people that have problem with drinking, you know, there are specific members for those people as well. But I think just keeping yourself together is one of the main things that will get you through. And for me, Al-Anon helped me to get myself together. I mean, I cried. I'm not exaggerating. I cried week in, week out for 2 years, and nobody told me not to. Nobody said I was weak. Nobody said I need to do this or that. I was just able to heal myself with the support and love in the rooms. That's a really precious gift.
Yeah, thank you for pointing out about the advice. So you're describing the precious gift of being able to sit there in any kind of mess you like, if that's where you are, crying or whatever, and still not be given advice. Unless you ask for it, you might get something, but you know, afterwards, you might say to someone, what would you do about that? And maybe they'll help you with that, or you can talk to them on the phone or something, but nobody's going to come up and say this is what you should do.
Yeah.
And that's such a rare thing, isn't it?
Most people, you know, they'll share their story, and as they say all the time, take what you like and leave the rest, and just by listening to others, that's helpful.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. That's all about. That's all we've got time for, just about. So I'd really sincerely like to thank you, Jackie, for coming on and speaking so wisely about the program.
Thank you.
If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon, you can contact them on 1-300-252-666 or go to alanon.org.au. If you're concerned about your own drinking, you can contact Alcoholics Anonymous on 1-300-222-222 or go online at aa.org.au. If the content in the segment you just listened to has raised questions or caused distress to you, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.